We now have Rory McIlroy and another current major winner weighing in with some very interesting quotes, leading us to believe that they'd like the structure of some of the fields to be similar to what we're seeing on LIV, with much more limited fields of the top players. We also have a lot more fallout with the official World Golf rankings that just came out last week. The big announcement from LIV, we talked about it here on the show. We now have guys like, of course, Jon Rahm, Neiman speaking out harshly in criticism of that. And on top of that, we've got an announcement just these past couple of days from the RNA changing, in a lot of ways, three big points of the structure of the qualifying requirements for the Open Championship, which I think in a large way is a response to trying to find alternate ways to expand these fields as we have more players going to live and no longer participating in the official World Golf ranking. So we've got obviously a whole lot to talk about. But first, let's get into those quotes, because we've obviously seen a major reversal, starting with Rory, on his overall take and rhetoric towards the LIV in general. I've been just enjoying kind of I'm a couple episodes in watching the unfolding of Full Swing.
You can see how tired he's gotten.
And just seeing, you can, this is, I mean, we heard it from the outside looking in, and we kind of got some idea of what he felt in that moment that the tour kind of turned on him. But you now are starting to see the emotion that went with it, and him very much feeling like that sacrificial lamb. So with Rory, you know, backing out of the policy board and really no longer having any real reason to be the defender of the PGA Tour, we're starting to hear what he would like to see in an ideal world. And it's starting to honestly sound a lot like what we see from LIV. Let's get into kind of what he started off saying. So, The comments that got out there that eventually some others would respond to and double down on was Rory. He was kind of asked, you know, what he wanted to see in the tour. And he said, "I'm all for making it more cutthroat, more competitive. Probably won't be very popular for saying this, but I'm all for less players and less tour cards and the best of the best." So of course, I get why he's saying he's not going to be popular for saying this. And there's some fallout even. And we'll talk about Wyndham Clark and what he said, because he did get a lot of backlash from it. But starting to sound a whole lot like LIV. Smaller fields, best of the best. I'll keep going back to it. Phil Mickelson's his interview that he did on the Pat McAfee show, where he said the business model of LIV was to put the best players that they could up every single week. And the guarantee is who you're going to get to see. So interesting there.
It is interesting. And was there anything mentioned by Rory about less events? No, he just wanted just shorter fields. I mean, I guess less events are just like you're going to be in the designated events and the majors, and that's it. Shorter fields. Sounds like LIV.
It does. But the backlash has come, and I'll tell you my take on it too, because I've also, personally, I've been enjoying seeing some of these non-household names come up and win in recent weeks. But this was kind of like amplified, this message. And the Rory message kind of, it hit a couple of headlines, but then it was amplified dramatically when Wyndham Clark was asked about it. And the reporter was prompting him, saying that Rory had made these comments about smaller fields. What's your take on that? And he said, "I mean, I think it would be amazing if our tour was 100 guys. I kind of said this a few times, 100 guys, and we have 20 guys that get relegated every time, every year. Doesn't matter who you are." And okay, so again,
and those 20 guys is the Korn Ferry's opportunity to come up.
Relegated just, meaning they,
like, that's your turnover. 20 guys, 20 will go out, 20 will come
out. Out. And now I don't know, like, again,
who knows where they come from?
Interesting thought. And I'll paraphrase this, he basically said, "This is above my pay grade. I'm not the one making this decision." So it's not fleshed out of who comes in and who goes out and how they come in and how they go out. He was basically just saying that the overall idea of being a more competitive product, as Rory was saying, and saying that we're effectively more eyes, even more eyes would be on those FedEx Cup playoffs, because those would not only be your moment to get in or out of the playoffs, it would be in or out of your moment to keep your tour card. So if you had more guys on that tour card cut line. You know, he kind of went on to say, I don't know what the number is, but I think it's just nice to elevate the product and make it to where the best players are playing on TV more often and against each other.
Mm-hmm. I get that. What's interesting, though, is he says it'll be more competitive if there was less people in the field.
He's saying that it would be the top guys in the field,
but still,
and you would be competing to be there.
Right.
What he was saying in his interview was less sponsors, exemptions, and the like.
I get that. 56 less people in a field, 156 down to 100. Don't you think any golfer would want that? Don't you think it would be easier to win? Forget about the caliber of the
players. I'll tell you, a whole lot of guys who don't want that.
Who's that?
The guys who aren't in,
but you take a guy like Jake Knapp. He wouldn't be in that 100, but he ended up beating all those guys recently.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Those are who's not going to like it. To point in point here, DP World Tour player Richard Mansell, he went on X, Twitter, and he said, basically firing back at Clark, he said, good job they didn't do this when you were finishing outside the 100 on the PGA Tour not very long ago. Closed shop idea is a terrible one. Remember where you came from. There are a lot of good players waiting to break through.
That's the counterpoint. Yeah.
So this is where I think the PGA Tour has to have a certain reckoning. Liv, and I get it. I think they're both good business models. I think both of them independently are wise in their business model and have reasoning behind those business models that makes sense. Mm-hmm. For example, Phil Mickelson explaining Liv's model of saying, we are going to make sure we have a lineup of guys who are in the field every single week. Now they take it one step further with no cut to ensure they're there every round. And his idea being, it benefits the sponsors and the fans that nobody's left out.
Mm.
They're always there. And it's their top guys that they're able to piecemeal together. You know, like you get a ticket to a live event, John Rahm's going to be playing.
Yep.
You know, Brooks Koepka is going to be playing. Yep. And you're going to get to see them, and you're going to see them all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, the PGA Tour, you have guys obviously commit. And you can see if your favorite player is committed to the field or not, but you have a much more fluid and ever-changing field.
Right.
The benefit to that is that guys have the opportunity to come up.
Right.
And the exact point that Mansell's making here is that great to say that now, but if they said this 2 years ago, Wyndham, you wouldn't be there.
You'd be out.
So it's interesting. And I think what it's a backlash of is now, as you now have a competing tour, now, whereas the PGA Tour lived in the luxury for many years of not having a competing tour and being able to put this product up how, when, and where they wanted to.
Right.
Now, I think the knee-jerk response is when you have a non-signature event and it doesn't have household names, and now the tour is kind of competing for eyeballs with Liv and some of the competition that's arising. It makes more sense for them to say, well, we got to put our best foot forward every single week.
Yeah.
But by doing so, you could cut off your nose to spite your face.
Exactly, right.
And now you have less of the young talent coming up.
Yeah, it's tough because I'm asking the question a lot now. Like, what is the point of some of these non-designated events? Now, I understand it's for these younger players to move up the ranks, but there's like no one in the field. You know what I mean? They're almost just throwing those tournaments out there for the heck of it. And I get it. There's other players out there that are young. They're trying to earn their spot. They're trying to move up the ranks. Those are the events to do it in. You're not going to see Rory at this event, Scottie Scheffler.
The idea is...
you can't do away with them.
Right.
And unless you cut out the farm system of golf. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right. And what I think the PGA Tour is planning on doing is alternating which events are signature, are elevated year to year, so that one event doesn't fall by the wayside. So this year we saw the Arnold Palmer Invitational was a signature event, brought a huge field. I believe next year it won't be. They'll rotate to something else. Mm-hmm. But I do think that if we got away from golf being every Sunday, I think a lot of us would miss it. So as a fan, I understand that you can't support 28 or whatever it is, weeks of signature events, big purses, every guy showing up.
Right.
But I'd rather have weeks when I still have golf to watch, even if it's not a signature event.
Okay.
And I'll watch some guys who I haven't seen play before and get the opportunity to play. Mm-hmm. It might not have the as broad of appeal to bring in as many television sets. You know what I mean? But you get what I'm saying?
I mean, you're a golf fan. You can watch anybody, any person, male, female, play golf on TV. We joke, we watch the Gene Little, the old school Pine Valley. You know, those. If it's on TV, we're going to watch it. But I think some of these other people are kind of just tuning in to see some names, and that's where it'll hurt for those.
No doubt. It's no different than how some people will just tune in for the majors. Like, and I can liken this to other sports. Like, I don't watch every tennis event.
Yep.
But I'll watch the U.S. Open.
Sure.
I'll watch Wimbledon.
It's exciting.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there are people like that who aren't like us who are have a golf podcast or are watching golf no matter what. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that I think that there's still a place for it. But regardless, there's these voices now are speaking up, Rory, Wyndham, of wanting to have it be more competitive, more high caliber, you know, less in the field. But how do you implement that is the tough decision. Yeah, because I think if you start to cut out the rising talent's opportunity to rise to that occasion and get there, then you're lessening the product for all of us.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So there's got to be a way to solve this. And the good news is we've got hopefully a reckoning with this framework agreement. The Masters is a couple of weeks away. I'm hoping, as Wyndham said, these guys with higher, it's above my pay grade. I'm hoping that the powers that be are finding out ways to work this out.
Yeah,
me because too. It'll benefit all of us. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, we had, talk about John Rahm now, we had the official World Golf Rankings. We had Greg Norman making the announcement. We covered it here on the show where he said they're withdrawing their application. They're no longer chasing official World Golf Rankings, mm-hmm. right? This is an opportunity where some of these guys are starting to voice up. I said from the beginning, I've always liked the quality of John Rahm to speak his mind. I've always thought that that was something that endeared him to a lot of people, that he speaks his mind. Uh-huh. In fact, I think one of my least favorite John Rahm moments was when he first went to Live, and it sounded like he was more reading a scripted press release of what they wanted to say than his natural feelings. But I don't think that lasts long with John Rahm. Now you're starting to hear John Rahm speak up again. So he was asked about the world rankings, and what he said is, I'm going to be honest, I didn't know they were still trying to get the world ranking points. Speaking about Liv when they backed out, he didn't even know they were still trying to pursue it. He goes, but the one thing I can say is that I'm going back to what I said 2 years ago in the DP World Tour Championship. I didn't think it was a good system back then. And if anything, the more time goes on, the more it proves me wrong. Mm. So he's showing that like he had his gripes with the official World Golf Rankings back then. And now I think the continued shared opinion of a lot of people on Live and even a lot of people on the PGA Tour is that it's no longer a fair, accurate representation because there are guys who are not accruing points and they're clear top in the world.
Yeah, I don't think that debate will ever go away. You know what I mean? I mean, you think about it. I mean, a guy like Rahm, DJ, I mean, Cam Smith, these guys are the best players in the world. They're just not getting recognized for it anymore. It's got to chapten. It's going to continue to bother him, that's for sure.
Yeah,
and bother me forever.
We went into the it last week talking about how the response official World Golf Rankings was like, this, we're not doing this to you on purpose, we're not trying to inflict this on you, this is not a political thing. They were saying that it's a math thing, and we can't I'm again paraphrasing, but they're saying we can't reconcile a way in your current structure to have equitable rankings,
right?
So is it just a catch-22? Who knows? But similarly, Neiman was kind of, he was asked about it, and this is kind of in jest jokingly saying, a reporter was basically saying to him, he has to be one of the favorites to win a major this year. And he said, well, how's that possible if I'm like ranked 100 in the world?
Right.
Like, how's 100 in the world? So just kind of jokingly saying like how his ranking is laughable.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
You know, but it was just so interesting. But just on John Rahm real quick, and this is not a full swing spoiler alert. I don't think it is, at least. But in the last episode, when they're at the Ryder Cup, there was this amazing moment between Rahm and Rory, and they're hugging each other after they won, and like they're crying. And you can, the microphones pick up Rory say to Rahm, you make me better. You make me want to perform better. And in that moment, Rahm starts to cry. It was the end of September. Rahm went to Live like a couple months later. I think if I can ask John Rahm one question is, did you know in that moment that that was it for you? You were not going to be on the PGA Tour anymore. You're going to Live. It's so interesting. Mm. When you do get to it and watch it, it makes you think, because it was like literally a month and a half later he signed. You know that that deal didn't start so and just happened so quick. There was lawyers and talks and probably months of thinking about it.
Yeah.
I think Rom knew in that moment after Hoy's neck up, like, this is it for me. I'm going to live. It's just interesting to see.
And similar to the Rory experience of where he, you could see the emotion now with the, with, you know, video of him in the cars and like that, that stuff that wasn't just a press conference.
Yes.
You could see the emotion and the energy drained out of him when he felt betrayed.
Yep.
I saw the same in John Rahm. Because you saw the interviews he was giving really right up until the U.S. Open when he still seemed like one of the guys who was more in defense of the PGA Tour and saying that, you know, his gripes with Liv and the competition that was there and the structure of it. But it felt like a lot of guys, when they were left out in the cold, it switched quick.
That's for sure.
But kind of continuing on that, and where we're kind of going from here with the official World Golf Rankings, Rahm went on to say, I'm very happy to see Jocko get invites. Speaking of Neiman's invite to the PGA Championship and to the Masters. And he said, while we don't have a clear path to majors yet, through LIV yet, I think there should be, they should be taking everybody under consideration. And this is something that we'll talk about in a second about some of the changes that we saw to the Open Championship and the RNA, because now at least we no longer are waiting to see if they're getting official World Golf Rankings. By taking that off the table, now I think that the majors in general have to stay relevant.
Sure.
And if, and we'll see how it sways, and you guys can tell us in the comments what your general feelings on the official World Golf Rankings right now. But if the relevancy of the official World Golf Rankings starts to wane in popular opinion, because at the end of the day, majors and everything, it all comes down to people wanting to watch.
Yeah.
So if popular opinion wanes that the official World Golf Rankings are no longer as viable as they once were, if the majors want to stay super relevant, then they've got to find other ways to get the best players in those fields. It's because if you get to a point where, let's say, a guy like Neiman, who is thought of as one of the guys who's playing the best right now, was not invited, you could start to see more fans back away and saying it's not what it once was.
Yeah, I know. And it's going to be hard because it's always going to still come down to those 54 holes. You know, like we I think on a recent episode, we were saying something like top three money earners on LIV get an invite. But there's always going to be the people like, yeah, but money earners for what? A 54 hole event schedule. Like, you're not the same as the other people on tour. There's always going to be that. So I don't know how they're going to come to this agreement of letting LIV guys in. Unless it's a live-based qualifier where all live guys go and play a 72-hole event and the top three, I don't know.
Well, yeah, and it's going to be largely looking to some other tours, which we're going to kind of get into in a second. And just finishing that thought on Rahm, he said, and kind of like expressing what I think a lot of people are feeling, he said, if anybody in the world doesn't think Jocko deserves to be in the top 10 or doesn't know that he's a top player in the world, I don't know what game you're watching. We can tell. I think anybody who watches golf can tell who the best players in the world are. Obviously, I don't think the ranking is effective of that right now to its entirety. So, see what I'm saying? Like, that's just it. It's the court of popular opinion to a certain extent, and reason and common sense to say. But I agree with you. Like, how do you then reconcile that? It's like common sense says that Neiman and Rahm are some of the best players in the world, but they're playing in a structure that's so vastly different than all of the other tours. Mm-hmm. How do you then compare them to each other? But I've said from the start, there's got to be a way. So let's take a quick word from our sponsors there, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about those changes that the RNA announced for the Open Championship, which seems like they're clearly trying to find a way, aside from the official World Golf Rankings, to still make sure that their Open Championship reflects the best players in the world.
Yep.
So let's do a word and then we'll come back to it. So listen, guys, nothing can do more to sharpen your short game than a fresh set of grooves, especially if those grooves are spin milled into the new Vokey Design SM10 wedges. Bob Volke and his team, they're always grinding, and the work shows in the SM10, already a favorite among the best wedge players in the world. And that SM10, it was designed with the three keys to great wedge play in mind: shot versatility, distance and trajectory control, and maximum spin. In fact, Mike, we've gotten the opportunity. We're going to be getting fit for the new SM10s this week. And one of my favorite things is that shot versatility, getting the option, or I should say the opportunity, to work with a great fitter who will not only make sure that those wedges fit your particular swing, your gapping, all that type of stuff, but really understanding the different types of shots you play in your game. We play in all different locations, all different types of grass, and that's where you get the versatility in the SM10 line with those bounce and grind combinations to make sure you get the right one. So get better wedges and become a better player with those Volke design SM10 wedges. Go to Volke.com to sharpen your short game with the SM10 and find a fitter near you.
And guys, the FootJoy Tempo series just launched not long ago. A lot of people, they've been watching our recent videos. They've been asking about those awesome hoodies and vests we've been wearing. And it's called the Tempo series because, let me tell you something, these guys are genius. I mean, yeah, I love, you know, FootJoy, when they come out with these new products, they think of everything for us, which is the best part. I mean, the apparel was designed to keep us cool when it's warm. And then when we're in the shade, it kind of provides a little bit more warmth for us. Because at the end of the day, I mean, it's always evolving out there. I mean, you and I, sometimes we tee off at 7 a.m. It's freezing or cold. I mean, we make the turn, it's 80 degrees, and then, you know, maybe if we're playing 36 in a day, it's getting cooler on the back end of the second round. So as things are changing out there, you need some apparel that's going to help you. Go check out the entire lineup. And guys, the colors are awesome in the series. Go to footjoy.com, check out all the styles that they have. Pick up a hoodie, man. You're not going to be disappointed. We could promise you that.
All right, so again, we got, obviously, the official World Golf Rankings, and we've got the fallout that's come from that and the attempt of the majors to respond. One we've already saw right out the gate was the Masters and the PGA Championship both extending invitations to Neiman, largely based on his big win in Australia.
Right.
But again, looking at other places, the key thing that I'll keep coming back to is, so far, none of these majors have directly identified performance at LIV as a qualifying event.
Right.
You know, they're not saying, hey, if you finish here at LIV or whatever, they're not saying that. They're still looking to other vehicles to get them qualified in, wins on other tours or other things that weren't otherwise looked at. So they made three big changes, the RNA. The first is, in the past, if you were an Open Championship winner, you were exempt to play in the Open Championship until the age of 60.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, just a few years ago, that was 65, and that dropped down to 60. So it's nothing new for them to reduce that, but they have been seeing reductions in recent years. This time, they've announced that they're reducing that from 60 to 55 years old. I think, in a way, it's a smart move. It really, if you think about it and really are true to yourself, thinking about, like, there aren't any 55-year-olds, 60-year-olds who are really going to be competitive.
Yeah,
right?
I don't think
the
so.
The only thing, and I got to give credit where credit's due, what Phil Mickelson did at the Ocean Course, winning at his age, kind of almost proved, like, anything could happen. And now we're in a world where advancements in nutrition and all that type of stuff are making it where guys who are older are able to compete. But I do like the idea of just, like, that threshold, you know, getting into that 60 and up, getting some younger, opening up some spots for some younger names.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas other guys might be doing you out there non-competitively, just kind of as a victory lap.
Right.
I think it'd be great to see some younger names.
I agree.
But one name this does definitely bring in, and you're going to get a few, I'm sure, conspiracy theorists who think this is a knock against LIV. I don't think so. I think that, because I said, this is not the first time they've made a move like this, but Phil Mickelson himself is 53 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That means that Phil will, unless something changes, because he's no longer accruing any official World Golf Rankings points, Phil could possibly be out of the Open Championship in the next 2 years. Now, I say very possibly, because Phil came in second at the Masters.
Right. He did.
There is the possibility of Phil winning, another major or placing high enough that he gets in.
Mm-hmm.
Also, keep in mind, both the U.S. Open and the Open Championships are truly opens. Any of these guys, if they're truly still competitive at any age, can play through the qualifiers and qualify their way in.
Yeah, I would not bet against Phil at Augusta, by the way, ever.
Right.
I mean, there's one place. I don't care how old that guy gets. 60, 65, 70.
But he showed us he could do.
I know.
That's for sure.
I know.
And I wouldn't bet against Phil if he wanted to go through the qualifiers and qualify his way in.
Yeah, true.
So I don't think that that's as big of an effect as the headline it might grab of saying that they reduced the age and it's closer to Phil's age. But there's some other ones that are important. The RNA has introduced a new exemption category that effectively another way in will be a top five finisher in the International Federation's ranking list. So to give you an example, LIV player Andy Ogletree he's currently second in the International Federation rankings list.
Right.
What this is built upon, and you know, kind of to quote from the original source, it said the new exemption will offer players competing on the Asian Tour, the Japan Golf Tour, and the PGA Tour of Australia and the Sunshine Tour the opportunity to qualify. So keep in mind, those tours are also still tied to official World Golf rankings, but these are not necessarily tours that have issued a ban against LIV players like the PGA Tour has. Mm-hmm. So I said this in the last episode, I'll say it again. I think that you will start to see, if this becomes the vehicle for these guys to play their way in, you're going to start to see on LIV off weeks, LIV players going and playing in these other Asian Tour, DP World Tour, all those events to accrue the necessary points to get into some of the majors.
Table.
And I would not even be surprised if the LIV schedule gets strategically planned around certain events that get all their guys over there to play in.
Right. I mean, they want their product in those majors. No doubt. Yeah.
No doubt about it. I mean, again, coming back to full swing, a lot of people calling it a major, major turning point when, you know,
LIV showed up to Augusta.
Yes.
Reed, Brooks.
Right. Yeah. And Brooks winning the majors that he won.
Yep.
You know, proving that a guy on LIV is still, you know, his game is still good enough to win a major.
Right.
Right. The RNA also announced the third exemption was for the Africa Amateur Champion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's wise. I think as we become more and more of a global game, I think that opens and majors should put, you know, amateur and other champions from different regions of the globe should be invited to play in, because I think it motivates more growth of the game in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
It gives more worldwide visibility to some of those players, get their chance to play in an event that everyone is watching. So I think that there are three, I think, wise, smart changes, but it really comes down to, like I said before, the majors are going to have to find a way to stay relevant. Because if you continue to go down this path where LIV and who knows if what if LIV blazed a new trail for even more leagues to start? Yeah. Maybe there's additional startup leagues and of all different structures. If the World Golf Ranking System can't get together and find a way to make the numbers work, then to stay relevant, the majors have to find a way to include the top players.
That's true, man. I can't wait to see how this is all going to unfold. I hope they don't push it down the road more, you know, because we're a few weeks away.
With the framework agreement.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's at some point it's either going to happen or it's not going to happen. And I think that point is rapidly approaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to kind of like read the tea leaves, so to speak, is I'm starting to be in the camp that it might not happen.
And then it would just be how it is now.
I think it'll be how it is now. You'll choose the tour you're going to play on. And if you're on the PGA Tour, you'll play through whatever changes are made to its structure. And if you're on the LIV Tour, you will find ways to win your way into the majors that you want to, whether that be through alternate tours or whether it be through changes to the majors qualifying structure.
Yeah, I just... When Rory was calling for a change when Rahm left because his head was at Ryder Cup, they lost Rahm and Hatton off that team last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and they didn't have a big enough – they didn't have a – I should say they didn't have a, on paper, good enough team as it was, even though they ended up winning. But I don't know. I can't see them losing Rahm and Hatton. I think something has to get done. Something.
Yeah. I mean, we talked all this time. We didn't talk about Ryder Cup.
I know.
But that's another thing that it comes in. And Ryder Cup, its own relevancy, and to stay relevant.
Right.
You have to ask yourself the question, is the Ryder Cup still relevant with guys like Rahm, Hatton, all those guys, if they are all out? It's tough to say.
Right. And no one's yet to pick a captain's pick. Well, it was only the first year of it. That was on LIV.
Well, wasn't Koepka? No, Koepka.
Koepka earned his spot.
He earned that spot.
Zach said he wasn't in the episode. He goes, well, he's even joking. The good news is I didn't have to pick Brooks.
Right. You know? Right. Right.
But it might happen where they might have to pick Rahm. Can they?
Well, they can on the U.S. side because the PGA, which runs the Ryder Cup, has no specific ban on LIV players.
Okay.
However, the DP World Tour, which runs the European side, does have its own fines and bans. So I do not believe that you could pick a Ryder Cup. You know, I don't think you could take a captain's pick for Ryder Cup on the European side and have it be allowed. On the U.S. side, you can.
Interesting.
But this is how messy everything is.
Yeah.
So exactly. Hopefully it gets cleared up. We can only hope for this framework agreement to give us something. Anyway, that's everything we have, you guys. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you in the next one.